Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So this one, accusing PBS of pseudoscience, so I'll throw them in the category of profiles in pseudoscience, because it repeatedly and egregiously presents science inaccurately, made up stuff, just ruins any connection between the real explicit facts and what they kind of wish the truth was, or what sounds fun to them, or some kind of other stuff. So it just doesn't, it isn't science in the sense of it's not what science is supposed to be, which is really disciplined and really careful. It doesn't jump to conclusions. It's supposed to be able to really defend its conclusions and defend it with evidence, okay? It doesn't just tell stories. It shows up with hard evidence on the table. You know, it doesn't say, I saw a gun, I saw a fingerprint, you know, I saw footsteps. No, it comes in with plaster casts of fingerprints and, well, feet prints. And, you know, it comes in with evidence, okay? It might even have a videotape of collecting the evidence. You know, now with modern technology, it might have really good evidence. I mean, really good. You know, like, theoretically, really solid. So solid that you couldn't say, well, they cheated, or they manipulated, or they did something. So, yes. So, PBS is guilty of just promoting, propagandizing for a religion. Okay? And it started as a religion. Okay? Kinetic energy is the subject. And it started as a religion, and it's still a religion, and that's all it ever will be as long as they hold on to it. And so scientists have to someday grow up and admit their science made a mistake, and there's absolutely no good reason to keep defending the mistake. It's kind of like Benjamin Franklin, though. They concede that Franklin guessed wrong, and Franklin would admit, I guessed, okay, positive and negative. He guessed. He didn't have any good reasoning to base it on. Not a lot of reasoning, let's just say. He didn't have a big pile of evidence. He just had to call one thing positive and one thing negative, so he did it, even though he didn't really have the evidence to do it right. And he did it wrong. And science sort of admits he did it wrong, but they didn't fix any of it. They didn't change their science to reflect that mistake, you know, and to redo it, because, oh, it's just too complicated. That means all the papers written and all the things are all got the wrong assignment, and, you know, how do we change the assignment without having to rewrite all those papers to put in there? Well, this guy didn't think positive and negative in the right positions, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, just too messy. Well, science shouldn't care about it being too messy. It should just care about the fact that you can't build on crap. So it doesn't matter that the cornerstone has already been cast in concrete and you've already built 2 feet up on the building. It's got to go. That's what a scientist should say. So anyway, I'll read this comment first because it's really right on the subject, and it's helpful in the sense that it just shows that, boy, this is, I don't, you know, it is all dependent on a lot of your underlying assumptions about how mechanically things work and how you visualize the world. And obviously I have a long time relationship with a completely different vision of the universe, in the sense that I've always thought of it as being made of stuff that was real, okay? Nothing magically arrived anywhere, and there was no, you know, you had to see the little bits and things. The difference was real between something A doing something and something B is doing something different, and there always a good reason for the something different. It isn't just, well, we do the math different. Now the math can't change the reality. All right, anyway, so with that stated, I will read this. Okay, in trying to understand, I mean, I think the chain fountain video was actually pretty good in terms of, you know, identifying that, yeah, just follow the friction. Because friction is a transfer of energy. Heat is a transfer of energy. Heat isn't a magical byproduct. It's a transfer. It's taking the energy and turning it into something that's not as invisible as motion. But it's just as real as a transfer. If it was money, it's real money leaking out of somebody's pocket. That's how it has to be seen. All right, anyway, in trying to understand the chain fountain and the arguments you're making, I realize just how much I struggle with the definition of the word energy. So that word shouldn't bother you because it's a really good word. It just means motion, you could say. Something has motion in the universe. And then all you're saying is, well, how significant is motion? Does it have a lot of motion, like velocity, or is it massive? And therefore, you know, it's got a lot of pennies. You know, is its motion made out of a $10,000 bill, or is its motion made out of 10,000 people with $1 bills? The capacity to do work. Okay, so that definition, okay, in my opinion, work is energy. So work is just saying you're transferring the energy. Motion is being transferred from $10,000 bills to $1 bills in something else. It's being transferred, that's all. It doesn't translate into a sense of understanding for me. Force, so force also equals energy, also equals work. Force is just in the different forms of the currency. So the currency, you could say, is the force. In gravity, you have a bucket and you're collecting currency. It's raining pennies. The bigger your bucket is, the more pennies you'll collect. The more mass you have, the more pennies you'll collect. When you hit the ground, what's going to be counted is, how many pennies do you have? Similarly, is the concept that gives me trouble. Force, similarly, is a concept that gives me trouble. I've assumed I understand these concepts, but it turns out I didn't. I think I finally had an aha moment, though, as you were explaining this. And as dumb as it may sound, it's not going to sound too good to me, yeah, I'd summarize it as the conservation of shape. So if we thought of motion as a direction, yeah, that's okay, but you have to understand the shape has a length and a width. You know, it's, you still have to understand that, you know, the motion is made out of, you can't disconnect the fact that the mass, the number of people that have wallets, is really important. How much is in their wallets is important too. They're equally important. So think of it as wallets and currency in the wallets. Okay, and that's basically, you know, I just think of it as an amount of something, and you might as well just think of it as an amount of money. And so you can have a lot of wallets with a little bit of money, or you can have one wallet with a lot of bit of money in it. Would you say that that's at all an accurate understanding of the arguments you've made? The direction argument is, I'd be okay with that shape argument if we start talking about neutrons, because frankly it's the shape of neutrons that give you motion, that make your atoms move collectively. All the neutrons sort of have to agree with each other in terms of which way they're pointed for you to go in a direction. So I would argue that the difference between a wrench sitting on Earth and a wrench flying through space, you know, hurled at Mars, the difference between those two wrenches is their neutrons are pointing in different directions. Okay, you know, one of them has more chaos. You know, there's neutrons pointed this way and pointed this way and pointed that way and pointed that way. Where the one going to Mars, more of them are pointed this way than are pointed that way, towards Mars than away from Mars. So it has a disproportion in its neutrons. But that gets too deep. I mean, to give you some intuitive understanding. So I'm saying the currency argument, the analogy, is better, I think, than trying to understand it as force bits that have turned the direction of a neutron. That's a little more complicated. Effectively, I think I'm just saying the conservation of momentum. Yes, that's all there is. That's all you need to understand. That's all it started with, and again, they can't get the history. They can't even be a little bit honest to the history. But in a way that the particularities of my own mind are able to make sense of it. Well, I can't deny you the right to do that. But okay, it still has to be an accurate analogy. So I don't know what to say to that. All right. So I shall pause and we'll go to the PBS video. Alright, should be back. Alright, so this is the newest video by Matt O'Dowd, PBS Space Time. I could scroll that up so you see it. You know, gets lots of views, notoriety, all that kind of stuff, respected as a science source, la la la, but it is a lot of woo. And he admits that, you know, in a comment section just this week, that a video he made 5 years ago was basically woo bullshit. Doesn't say I took the video down, doesn't say I annotated the title to point out I don't believe this crap anymore. Doesn't say anything like that, so it's still just garbage science, in a sense. He's acknowledged it's garbage science in a way. And it's not accurate, it's not right. But he doesn't feel a need to fix it. So anyway, it's unlike this channel. This channel's, you know, pointing out draft physics. So yeah, I said some things 10 years ago that, you know, crap. But I don't need to fix it because the whole point of the channel is finding the right answer. But anyway, the whole point of the channel is, yeah, you make mistakes when you're drafting. It's not the final product. I'd say the newer videos, I'm not going to let them stay if I find something to be flawed in any of them. Any major flaws. There are minor ones, little ones. Alright, so anyway, in this video, he points to a video he made 2 or 3 years ago as a reference. And it's so bad, so that's why he's in this pseudoscience category, because he's not even acknowledging that, well, maybe he didn't do too good a job. Now, and it's a terrible video, frankly, in terms of describing anything accurate about the actual history of the word energy, the actual history of the concept, what was at stake, or, you know, 200 years ago or 300 years ago in the argument. Nothing. It's just a complete pile of misrepresentation. It's overtly just lies. Okay, so they're just lying about what the science actually is, what actually took place, what actually is the consequences of what they're arguing for, which is a complete destruction of Newtonian mechanics. Not just some sort of rewrite, okay? These people aren't attacking, you know, evolution with some minor change. They're attacking the very concept of evolution, these creationists, with their kinetic energy. Newton's mechanics, Newton's theories, Newton's predictions all wouldn't work if what they're saying is correct. That's the truth. And they're pretending the other, it's the exact opposite. They're pretending this is even Newton's idea, which is really offensive to Newton. Alright, looks like there's no sound. Yeah, that's not good. Alright, hit this button. Ugh. Technology.
Supported by the great.
Well, that's a little bit too much. We have to crank that down a little. Probably have to fix it up here, actually, because that's way too much. So we'll drop that down.
Courses Plus. A physicist sees a guy standing on the edge of a rooftop and shouts, "Don't do it! You have so much potential."
It's always good to start with a rogue. That's still too loud to me, anyway. Too loud. Louder than I am. It's not proportional to my volume. So you have to do all of this by, you know, your own senses, and it's a little bit untechnical. I wish, you know, there was a little meter, you know, that would show what the microphone is hearing, but there isn't.
We all know what it feels like to be energetic. To have energy. It's this something that allows us to move, be active, get out of bed in the morning, and you can...
So we know that that's not really the scientific definition, but the idea is yes, this idea is the motion itself. More motion, less motion. Motion is energy. Energy is always in the form of motion, even motion you don't see. There's a lot of motion inside your brain. The electricity moving through all of the different synapses, is all of that motion requires us to burn energy. I mean, in the case of our brain, it's like almost 90% of the energy you're using when you're sedentary is just your brain running, like 100 watts of heat.
Have more or less of the stuff. You can get it from breakfast, you can lose it by mowing the lawn. Energy seems near tangible to us. We imagine it as this...
Alright, so these are all poetic speeches. Somebody wrote all this crap, and, you know, this isn't just some sort of argument he's making, and, you know, an idea. Here, I have an idea, and I'm going to explain it to you. And it's all a bunch of engineered text to attempt to create a mood. It's like a little... It's a story, and the story has been ingrained. Oh, you went out in the fishing boat, and you went out to get the great white whale. But there were no great white whales, so you had to settle for a goldfish. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. And the boat smelled like shit. But you won't put that part in, because it'll ruin the poetry.
Ephemeral substance, or a mystical influence. But that intuitive sense has inspired us to discover the most powerful and useful concept in all of physics.
So this is just really scary because, yes, the concept of squaring the velocity for no good reason. And there was no good reason in the very beginning, there was no good reason in the middle, and there's clearly no good reason now. There's no, absolutely zero evidence that this crap is true. They can't point me to it. If I pay you for a link to this proof of kinetic energy, I won't have to pay out the money because nobody will ever produce the evidence. There is no evidence of mv squared. One half of it are mv squared. There's no real evidence.
In physics, energy is not a substance. Nope.
Well, that's your problem right there. It's obviously something. So, you know, to say it's not a substance, well, it has substance. It changes the very nature of something. The bullet sitting here with no energy released, you know, with the energy just stuck and going in little circles inside of the gunpowder chemicals, well, that's totally benign. It's totally different than the bullet launched.
Or is it mystical? Energy is a number.
Okay, says you. Obviously, it does come down to numbers, so that's sort of what I'm saying. It's a currency. And the currency is just made up of wallets, okay, and what's in them. And the catches, so you know, there's always catches, right? So something has, you have wallets, you know, based on how much mass you have. And inside each wallet, though, has to be exactly the same amount of dollars. So you can have each wallet has a dollar bill, or each wallet has $2, each wallet has $3. But you can never have some of your wallets have $5 and some of your wallets have $2. That doesn't happen. So when you're transferring your currency with something else, that's the catch, is you have to transfer it completely in the sense that you have to give all their wallets the exact same amount. So if they have more wallets, you know, you have 500 $5 bills and they only have 200 wallets, you can't put two fives in the wallet.
A quantity. And the quantity itself isn't even particularly fundamental.
Oh, I mean, it's just amazing that it's not particularly fundamental when, of course, it's particularly fundamental. The movement of photons causes the movement of electrons, which causes the movement of atoms, which causes the movement of objects. It's so fundamental. It couldn't be any more fundamental. It's insanely fundamental.
Instead, it's a mathematical relationship.
Oh, see, this, you know, this word mathematics, like it's something different than physics. No, the math has to relate exactly to the physics. The math is just a shortcut. A math is just saying, the math is just like my currency analogy. Math is just an analogy. And the analogy is trying to say, let's formalize the important factors. What are the variables? What are the things that make a difference? And you're just putting the things that make a difference into the math, and you're getting rid of all the superfluous stuff. So the analogy doesn't need anything else but the idea of a location and an amount in a location.
Between other more fundamental quantities.
So again, there's nothing. There's no other more fundamental quality than the fact that photons are moving the speed of light, and they do impart momentum. They give things momentum. They're a force. Gravity is a force. It gives things momentum. Why? Because it has momentum to give. Nothing gives momentum without having momentum.
It was 17.
Energy. Energy and momentum are equal sign words. So every time I say momentum, I'm just saying energy. And every time I say energy, I'm just saying momentum.
Century polymath Gottfried Leibniz.
Right, so he does this now. Now later he'll point out how, well, maybe there's a little bit of a credibility problem with Leibniz. But he starts off by making him into some polymath, Leibniz guy, really smart, blah, blah, blah. When what he basically was a plagiarist, okay, a guy, an opportunist, a guy who had money, was well-connected, and played the world. Got into everybody's business.
Who first figured out the mathematical form of what we call kinetic energy.
Right. Now, there's just nothing to say that he did figure it out, because the mathematical form he figured out was mv squared. What he now believes is kinetic energy is 1/2 mv squared. So it's a huge miscalculation. Not a great calculation, a huge miscalculation. Mv squared is clearly 100% the wrong answer without the half. It's 100% wrong. Leibniz would have said something has 500 energies. You say now it only has 250. That's a huge error. That's not a tiny error. It's a monstrously huge error. So let's understand. He didn't get a right answer. He wasn't accurately describing the world that existed. He provided Leibniz no physical evidence. He didn't do any physical experiment that demonstrated or proved in any way the existence of mv squared. Beyond dropping things in gravity, and gravity is a special force, not a regular force. Gravity is one of the few forces in the universe that ends up being constant at a rate, where all the other interactions or force transfers are not constant at a rate. Car crashes are not constant forces at a constant rate.
The energy of motion. He realized that the sum of mass times velocity squared for a system of...
So there's absolutely no connection between mass times the velocity squared that would connect to pool balls. So this, the problem is they don't have a differential in their masses. So if you change the masses of this, then you would have huge calculation problems in terms of using this equation, because you'd have to say that somehow the energy disappeared and all kinds of deformation and heat and all this other stuff, because everything heavy would end up being way less energy than anything light going fast. So the big problem with 1/2 mv squared is, obviously, I'd say, the faster you make something go, the more energy it has, because you're squaring the velocity. So big things have a huge disadvantage in being acknowledged to have the energy they do have, because you're saying that the higher the denomination of the bill, the more money it actually is. When, no, it's $5 is $5 bills. $5 isn't squared. I mean, 1 squared... versus 5 squared, right? It just doesn't add up, does it? 5 1 squares doesn't equal 5 5s squared.
Particles bouncing around on a flat surface is conserved.
Okay, so this is the big fake word, right? So it says right here, on a flat surface is conserved. This has nothing to do, Leibniz had nothing to do with any kind of idea of opening the discussion to the idea of conservation. This is a huge lie. So they keep saying that De Châtelet and Leibniz invented the idea of conservation. Now, it was invented like 1,000 years earlier, and it was really established by the very person these two characters were attacking, Descartes. Descartes, famous for, okay, not like it's like an obscure thing Descartes did. No, Descartes did it in a very overt and open way. He was the first guy to really say, this is the fact, okay? Here's the published book. It says right here in the first sentence or two, the universe is made out of an amount of energy, and that amount never changes. The energy just moves. It cycles through the system. That's the conservation of energy. the energy never disappears. It just moves from one object to another object to another object to another object to another object. It's just moving through the universe. One set amount of motion. His visualization was essentially to say something like God initiates the universe. He pushes it, and the energy he pushed it with is just moving inside. His finger went in, and the finger just keeps moving through the universe. The exchanges between objects is just the finger moving through the universe. Descartes invented conservation of energy. Not either one of these two jerks. And it's just such a lie not to sit there and say, no, that was already a settled subject by Descartes, and certainly Newton embraced. So this is exactly what they were attacking, was Descartes and Newton. So this is such a lie. And then he writes this one half, whatever, integral mv squared. Why he puts the integral here, I really don't know. Okay, just to make it look fancier, I guess. But we know this equation isn't what Leibniz was defending, and it wasn't what de Chatelet says she proved. She proved mv squared. That's what she claims. She claims she has solid scientific evidence that mv squared gives you the right answer. No one half here. And why is it in parentheses, right? When we know it's not in parentheses. it's one half of this value. It's just such a deception to do this. This is just religious people trying to paint their God with little happy faces.
It adds up to the same number, even though the speeds of individual particles changes.
So everybody already knew that, right? So let's just say everybody already had that conversation. Descartes, Newton, Leibniz, everybody was already on board, okay, with this idea that the energy is moving through the system. Now, what they didn't really connect was, all the little subtleties of what exactly heat was, and that you could have these subtle motions inside of objects. Now, Leibniz exactly stated that as the excuse for when his bad equation didn't get a right answer, he said, well, it's because there's motion inside of the thing. But you can say that, but proving it's another thing. So it's just like when physics girl said, I 100% transferred the momentum. That is, she took a 5-ton train, turned it into a 10-ton train, and lost half the velocity, which means she lost half the energy. Even though she has a twice as massive train, by their theory, the train lost half its energy. And yet there's absolutely no evidence of it. The experiment, I can show you the experiment. They dropped a little weight on the train. The train loses a tiny amount of velocity. So it's a little bit below half, in terms of its speed, reduces to a little below half. A tiny amount of energy is lost in the process of making the train heavier. There is no half the energy. They'll never have an experiment where they show this half the energy lost, half of it. A 16-pound bowling ball going twice as fast as an 8-pound bowling ball has somehow lost half of its energy. Half. Where did it lose it? How did my arm lose half the energy throwing the two balls? It's not possible. They have no explanation for it. It's completely anti-conservational.
At least assuming there's no friction and perfect bounciness.
So more words about blah, 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 perfect elasticity. And elasticity is not really supposed to be bounciness, right? It's supposed to be hardness. So it's just more wordplay, more dodges, more ways to try to make it confusing. So I will throw this in one more time that, even 300 years ago when this was debated, these arguments did revolve around levers, and they would have arguments with each other through correspondence. And unfortunately, they had to draw their own illustrations and all that stuff, so nobody did this very well. I mean, it took time to do all that crap, so there wasn't a whole lot of visual aids. And it is a little bit complicated when you start talking about the A side of the lever and the B side of the lever and all of that stuff. But all of these arguments were made, and they were, it's just that they were too obtuse or too hard for them to connect to the reality. So as I've pointed out, the lever was often used as an idealization, and they would even describe it as a perfect lever. That is, it doesn't weigh anything, and it's perfectly rigid, and it has a perfectly efficient fulcrum. Okay, so it's a balance, a perfect balance. Now, I'm not saying you don't even need a perfect one to get this, but the idea is the lever says, you know, if you're going to measure the weight of something, the two weights have to be at the same location. But if you change the location, so this one is at a 1 and this one is at a 2, okay, now you can balance uneven weights, I mean, in terms of velocities. You can do conversions because the motion here will be twice the motion here. So the velocity will be twice as much. So the simple argument is they could have proven 300 years ago, in my opinion, because none of them believed in perpetual motion. So they all got that part, that there isn't anything in this system that generates perpetual energy. You can't just make the water wheel turn without the water. Okay, so there's no free lunches here. You have to go out and work to get your energy. You have to work to steal it from something else. You have to steal your food from something else. All your energy is coming from stealing it from other batteries. You're eating the other batteries, creating, you know, more battery juice for you to run on. And that's how the universe works. All right, so the simple argument is that you could put the 5 mass could be dropped here, okay, and the 10 mass could be sitting out here. I mean, I want to do it the other way around. So this is the 10 mass being dropped on the scale. And logically, you can say, well, if I put a 5 twice as far out, that's exactly the same. The weight would be the same. And what's going to happen is this velocity, whatever it is, all right, velocity is x, is going to be 2vx here. Okay, this velocity will leave at twice the velocity that you drop this heavy thing with, because this mass is half the mass. And that's what the lever will do. And what did it do in that process by their definition, right? So mv, okay, understands that the mv here, the mass times the velocity, will equal the mass times the velocity here. You have half the mass, twice the velocity, twice the velocity, half the mass. The two numbers will equal each other. There's conservation of energy. By their definition, that didn't happen, okay? This side of the equation will end up being 1/2 as much energy as this side. So if this has a 1, this has a 2. This has twice as much, 2, okay, MV. It doesn't work. And it's demonstrated that it's obvious this side of the scale, you have to understand, if this side of the scale is looking over here, it sees a 10 because of the 5 being pushed out further on the scale. It's kind of obvious that the two things equal each other in the sense that they would balance. If I just place a 5 here and I just place a 10 here, the balance will stay balanced. This side of the scale thinks it's a 10. It doesn't know it's a 5. It doesn't know it's supposed to give it twice as much energy. It has no idea that's what it's doing. You could put a 10 here. You could put a 10 here. So you have a 5 out here. You could put a 10 here. This thing will see those two things as exactly the same thing. It can't tell the difference. You can put a 2.5 out here. See them all as exactly the same thing. It can't see over here and say, oh, that's a different kind of mass. I have to make it go faster. The lever makes it go faster. The lever does that work, does that conversion. So this simple experiment, if they had done it, all right, would simply prove it's impossible, okay, for mv squared to be correct. It can't work. It breaks logic. It won't work. It won't satisfy this equation. So if this was on a test, what is the consequence of this relationship, this circumstance? And the person says, yes, twice as much energy is made. That's a free energy formula. You've just described how to make free energy. Just keep dropping heavy things on a lever and launching light things, and you'll keep creating free energy. It doesn't work. It's horrible, rotten, lousy, crappy physics. And this simple analogy, which I think, is in, if you could read all the letters that were written by all the scientists on the subject for the 200 years between, 1650 and 1850, I bet you there was plenty of arguments just like this that pointed out it doesn't work. It's impossible, because if it did work, we'd all have one of these machines in our pocket. We'd all be making free energy all over the place because it's so easy to do. And obviously, if I turn this situation around and made this the 5, and then I launched the 10 from the slower position, you'd say, I lost half the energy, just like physics girl. You'd say, oh, I lost half the energy. How did I lose it? Where'd it go? Nothing broke, nothing bent, nothing got hot. What are you talking about? Oh, there was deformation. Where? Show me the video of it. Because it didn't happen. You can't conserve the momentum and then claim I lost half the kinetic energy. It's insanely stupid. No, a smart 13-year-old that took what they were saying seriously, or even got into, say they had a whole, like some school children took 2 whole weeks to study levers. If they did that, they'd figure out pretty quickly, hey, you know what? This doesn't make any sense, because theoretically, by their math, they're mv squared, they're 1/2 mv squared. I should have a free energy machine, and I don't. All right, so that's the big punchline. It doesn't work, and this is a lie. So anyway, he places this in the story when we're still in 1670. Okay, we're still, 1663, I think. So let's understand, Leibniz published his paper doing this mv squared thing 1 year before Newton published his. And everybody knew Newton was going to publish. So Leibniz knew Newton was going to publish his 5 years of dedicated work volume. And because Newton was told, hey, you've got this answer, you've got to publish it, okay? And so Newton actually spent 5 years. Like, there's 5 years where Newton doesn't write letters, he doesn't communicate with anybody, he doesn't do anything, he's pretty much just isolated, and he's working on this project. And everybody knows it because Newton's not around, and Newton's not interacting, and Newton's not playing with them, and he's not showing up for the softball games or anything. So everybody knew Newton was working on this, and Leibniz publishes before him, right? With his stolen calculus. So this is where the whole thing starts. So that's the actual physical reality, okay, is that there's an obvious shenanigans by Leibniz in having so much disrespect for Newton to publish right before everybody's waiting for Newton to publish.
Leibniz called this early incarnation of energy vis viva.
Right, and so why don't you say the rest of the stuff that Leibniz said, which is Newton and Descartes are too atheist. Their physics doesn't have enough God in it. That's what he said. So he not only called it something silly, the living force, because he actually believed, okay, Leibniz actually believed, especially early in his physics, that if a pea hit the Empire State Building, it could give the Empire State Building the same velocity as the pea. He believed things like that. A little pea could hit a boulder on top of a mountain, and it could move the boulder at 50,000 miles an hour, or whatever the speed of the pea was. I mean, really stupid things he believed. But he overtly says, Descartes is too atheist. Your physics is too atheist. It's going to ruin the world. It doesn't have God in it. Doesn't have any fun in it. That's his exact attack. So instead of putting that in this crap, all right, and then this text is even a lie. I mean, where'd you get this crap? Wikipedia? Where are you doing your physics? Because this is not historically accurate. Okay, so it says vis-a-vis, the living force, is an historical term. It's not a historical term. It's exactly what Leibniz called his newfound mv squared energy. That isn't even accurate, because it's not 1/2 mv squared. Remember, it's mv squared, no half in front of it. It's getting hugely inaccurate answers. It's getting wrong answers, big wrong answers. And let's understand, 1 year later, Newton publishes his book that gets all the right answers, that predicts Halley's Comet, that, you know, answers all the questions correctly. Okay, what's going to happen to X, Y, and Z in the universe? What are they doing? How are the moons and the Earth and all the rest of the stuff moving? He obviously wasn't using mv squared because he would have got wrong answers. All right, anyway, the term used for the first known description, the first known description, yes, Leibniz described something. He proposed a theory, mv squared. He proposed the theory. He labeled it this living force crap. This isn't just some kind of, you know, unknown thing. And he just said it. And then yet the text doesn't match. So as scientists, they can't even figure out that what I'm saying isn't what I just wrote on the screen. Okay, the first known description of what we now call kinetic energy. So it's obviously not a description of kinetic energy because it was wrong. And kinetic energy is obviously wrong. 1/2 mv² is wrong. This was wronger, okay? mv² is wronger. So, that's all this history should be saying. The first wrong answer, and we just made the wrong answer a little less wrong, okay? It was outrageously wrong what Leibniz, so we changed it to make it less wrong. But it's still really wrong. Okay, kinetic energy in an early formulation of the principle of conservation of energy. So he says, an early formulation of the principles of conservation of energy. That is a lie. It was conservation of viva visa. It was a conservation of Leibniz's mv squared. And everybody else, Descartes and Newton, also conserved their definition of energy. Their definition of energy was momentum, clearly. They said momentum is never destroyed. Okay, that's their argument, that it's conserved. Okay, so there's two arguments about two different definitions of the energy. There was never an argument about conservation of the energy. So Leibniz says, your theory has to be wrong because it doesn't conserve my vis-a-visa. And obviously the other side was saying, your theory has to be wrong because it doesn't conserve momentum. You moron. Yeah, you lose half the energy for no reason and you gain twice as much energy for no reason. It doesn't work. So anyway, so this, you know, they couldn't care less about the truth. They just paint this picture like, oh, Leibniz gave us this wonderful idea and concept. No, it was garbage. Let's understand Leibniz and Newton, okay? These two characters, I think Newton's a little bit younger, okay? So they, you know, both go into the 1700s. Leibniz dies poor and nobody. Newton is buried as a god, okay? Nobody was more revered as a character in the history of mankind. It was probably the most, you know, it was probably like the darkest day and the entire globe got dark the day Newton died. I mean, every flag was, you know, underground, you know. They couldn't even put the flags low enough, you know, for the sadness of the greatest scientist in the history of mankind. Leibniz, nobody believed him. Nobody liked him. He was a shyster and a bum. Okay? A crook. A thief. That's the truth. Nobody bought this crap.
The living force.
Nobody bought. None of the scientists of that time bought the crap that we need more religion in our science. None of them liked, I don't think, that accusation. I bet you 90% of the scientists of the time, even though they would say I go to church just so they don't get burned at a stake, 90% of them probably found Leibniz's argument that we need more God in our science offensive. But not today. They think it's swell. I love supporting creationism.
Fun side note. Leibniz was famously a rival of Isaac Newton.
No, he wasn't a rival for no reason, and he wasn't a rival till he overtly stole an idea that Newton had. Now, let's understand, Newton didn't visit Leibniz. Leibniz did visit Newton. So this is before calculus is introduced. So who do you think might have seen some of Newton's papers on the subject or the mathematics, right? And it's already a known fact that Newton had crap sprawled all over his house. Okay, so you know, it's clear that Leibniz stole the idea. Yes, anybody has a different signal, you know, for an integral. He changes a couple of little things to, you know, his own way kind of thing. It's not like he didn't know any math. Of course he knew some math. So he made it, he Leibnizized, but the idea itself was Newton's. And let's understand just how bad this was, that Newton, who hated controversy, hated drama, hated bullshit, didn't want to argue with anybody, had to sit there and, you know, have to defend his own hard work and say, no, that was my hard work. Okay, it wasn't his. I cut the grass. He didn't cut the grass, goddammit. And he had to go through this whole unpleasant process because of this guy who is known for doing this kind of thing. He has known in other controversies he was in to forge documents. This is not a nice guy. This is a guy building up his own ego so he can gain more, you know, material value in the world. He made friends with people for the very purpose of what's in it for me. He wasn't a nice guy.
Newton, besides the whole co-inventing calculus thing...
So again, he's saying they co-invented. Is there any good reason to think they co-invented? Is it just, oh, come on, it's just supposed to be a coincidence that he publishes 1 year before Newton, when we know Newton had already done it 15 years earlier, maybe even 20. That's why Newton was provoked into publishing, is the very fact that he had all of this math, he had all of this ability to track everything in space, and people were saying, you have to publish this stuff. So we're just so supposed to say that, oh, let's ignore the evidence that's pretty clear, and you're just going to pretend they both invented it. And Leibniz wasn't a religious kook that hated Newton's physics because it was too austere, too atheist. Get real. It's a creationist against a scientist, and you've chosen the wrong side.
Leibniz's vis viva was seen as a competition.
No, it was a competition. So again, they say it was seen, like, for no good reason, somehow people said 1/2 mv squared wasn't the same as mv. Somehow they had this silly notion that these aren't exactly the same equations. Mv and 1/2 mv squared. Those are identical equations. How could they possibly see a difference in those equations? How could they say those equations give different answers for what the truth is? I mean, it's ridiculous how they could have an argument about such a non-existent difference. What does the 1/2 mean? It doesn't mean anything. What square? Who cares? It doesn't mean anything. We didn't change anything. You broke the lever. You changed everything. You made free energy math and never made your free energy device to prove it. Your math is crap. The theory is crap. It started as a religious objection. It has nothing going for it, and you're still propagandizing for the great Jesus walked on the water. He is Lord. It's not even a Jesus, right? It's like Fred. Fred is the Messiah. That's what this stupid thing is. It's a fake phony. It's not even close.
To Newton's idea of conservation of momentum.
All right, let's understand. They all believed in conservation. Conservation was never really an issue. It wasn't anything anybody argued about.
Newtonian mechanics had only recently revolutionized physics.
No, so it didn't. It only had recently after Leibniz made his argument. So let's understand, Leibniz's argument came first. Mv squared came before Newton published his Principia. So Newton's mechanics, his F equals ma that they say, right? But Newton never said that. His F equals change in your momentum over a period of time. If you want it in units of time, you don't have to put it in units of time. So Newton clearly was saying F equals momentum. Force equals momentum. That's Newton's equation, and Leibniz is clearly a completely different equation.
And few accepted that our man Isaac could ever be wrong.
So more just, they just didn't believe because they were just too in love with Isaac Newton, and he didn't deserve all that because he was stupid, he was dumb, and he didn't get any right answers. I mean, this is just such drivel. That's not how you describe the fact that what Isaac Newton did was take a bunch of foggy bits and he created a lens that you could focus, and you just turn the lens and bang, everything's in focus. A remarkable accomplishment. And they're saying, oh, there's reason to doubt. There was no reason to doubt Newton. His answers were so right. We landed on the moon with Newton. Newton landed us on the moon, you fibber. So don't pretend that he was wrong about a goddamn thing. Because he really wasn't. I mean, the only thing he was wrong about, if he said, you know, ducks have some sort of scaly thing on their surface, you know, but you know, he didn't quite get feathers, you know, but he got the concept.
Besides, this Viva thing wasn't conserved in the event of friction.
It wasn't conserved in the event of momentum. So if you believed in momentum, Vis Visa is not conserved ever, frankly. I mean, if you give the first body the wrong answer, the wrong amount of energy, and then you have it interact and give energy to other bodies, yes, of course, you can have some pretend conservation. But as soon as you're changing the velocity and masses, as soon as you change the masses, you will not be conserving the energy. The momentum number and the Vis Visa number will not match. I mean, even the fact, again, you're sitting there and sliding right into your physics, something that started with the name Living Force. I mean, even that should be just such a huge giveaway. Do you really want to say Living Force is the truth?
Well, momentum was. It took another genius.
Right, so he says momentum was, when clearly it's not, by your own formulations. Your own formulations say, fuck momentum. They say it overtly.
Amélie du Châtelet, to show that vis viva, or energy, as Thomas Young eventually named it.
Right, so these are all characters, right? I mean, Thomas Young is famous for the double slit lie, okay, or the double slit fraud, or the double slit misinformation. Let's just call it an honest mistake, okay? So Thomas Young made more than one of them. You know, his drawings, his idea of two waves for the double slit experiment does not get the right answers. So they couldn't do the explicit, careful experiment and do actual measurements to see if the theory was correct. And it wasn't. And it isn't today. But yet people keep using it as if it got right answers when, no, it didn't get any right answers. De Châtelet did a bunch of bullshit experiments in clay, didn't get right answers. They don't work. You can't reproduce them because there's no such thing as standard clay. And if you use different clays, you'll get completely different answers. So it's completely useless as an experiment. It doesn't tell you anything about reality. And every really smart person could know clay has a bias for velocity, just as cornstarch has a bias against velocity. The faster you go into cornstarch, liquid cornstarch, the less progress you'll make. So you can make materials that will give you completely opposite answers, which means they're not very good rulers. So a good scientist would say, clay, bullshit experiment. Just forget about it. You're wasting your time. You got to find a better mechanism to measure energy. Because that one doesn't work. It's not a good ruler. It bends, it twists, it contracts, it expands. It does all kinds of things that make it as a ruler useless. So she didn't do any of this. So yes, Young applied the name energy, they say. Okay, he's the first person to use it publicly. Okay, in papers, they say other people. So it doesn't really matter. But yeah, it's a nice word. It's good to have a word for it, energy. The problem was, is they invented the word energy to make the description between the difference between potential energy and kinetic energy. So that's where kinetic energy gets dangerous. Because yes, we all agree there's potential momentum and then momentum. I would argue that it's really not potential momentum. Gravity is not potential momentum. Gravity is an active kinetic force falling. It's hitting things. It's not potential energy, it's real energy. you're not surprised that if, you know, you put something out in the rain and it collects the rain and it collapses, you don't go like snow on a roof. You're not surprised. Oh, look, it fell. Yeah, it did. Quite logically. Because it collected the energy.
It's conserved. It can never be destroyed or changed in form.
All right, so these are all false arguments that nobody disagreed with that. That was exactly what Descartes said. It can never be destroyed, only changed in form. Exactly Descartes' argument. 100 years before Newton. Well, whatever, 70. Before Leibniz. Descartes had already established this as the truth to knock down. Conservation. So he'd already established it, and established it in very eloquently and very well. And even though he was a religious kook, in pointing out that, you know, there was this argument about whether, you know, how God works in the world. And the truth he was kind of arguing was, is no, God barfed the universe, okay? And he isn't making it move now. It's doing its barf thing. Well, whatever. That's a perfect analogy.
When she introduced the idea of gravitational potential energy...
So this is not the truth. This is just a made-up story. This is not what she was doing. She was overtly attacking Newton. In her words, that's exactly what she's doing. Yes, she's doing a translation of Newton's Principia. And in that process, she's disagreeing with Newton on this subject. She's attacking Newton and attacking Descartes. And she's defending Leibniz. Old, now dead argument. So Leibniz is now dead, and she's reviving his zombie corpse to remake essentially a religious argument. She's reinvoking the creationism, and she's, you know, having an affair with Voltaire, who basically accuses her of being a creationist, of just, you know, redoing creation science. Oh no, let's not go backward, you know, to religious science. That's overtly what he's saying. They have kind of a fight over it, frankly. She ends up sleeping with some kind of turd and ends up dying having the baby. And then Voltaire later just concedes and says, I don't care anymore. Okay. That's the real history is much different than this little fairy tale you're painting. The fairy tale isn't the truth.
She put the laws of conservation of energy and momentum on equal footing.
So it doesn't make any sense at all. She didn't do any such thing. She didn't put them on equal footing. Her whole point was his momentum was the wrong answer. Newton was wrong. Descartes was wrong. I mean, it's idiotic to say this. They're on an equal footing. They keep doing this. There's this huge controversy. They even have competitions for somebody to prove what real energy is. Okay, and nobody enters. But anyway, the whole thing is a mess. Okay, but it's a real controversy. They're really, people have different opinions and they're arguing them with like these analogies, you know, these explanations. Like, well, how does the lever a real thing? How doesn't your fucking theory, your idiotic theory, break the most simple mechanical devices we can invent? You're breaking them with your theory. You do understand that. Or somehow you invented free energy and you never let us know and you didn't build free energy machines. Why don't you just build some free energy machines if you believe in free energy? Oh, I just can't believe how bad this is. So they're just reading out of the Bible. They were taught with the Bible. They're just telling us a Bible story about a whale and it ate Jonah and Jonah had some fish sandwiches and blah, 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 and pet his cat or something, or maybe that's Pinocchio. you know, the whole thing is too stupid. The whale's throat is this big. There's no way you can get a human through there. I mean, you can make all these arguments. It can't have happened that way. Fucked hard.
The brilliant experiments of James Prescott Joule and...
Okay, let's understand. So again, more hyperbole, more... Woo, 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 woo. He did an experiment because he didn't know whether he wanted to go with the new technology, electricity, okay, an electric motor versus a steam engine. So he was trying to figure out which way can he save more money running his beer business. So he wasn't a scientist. He wasn't looking for a scientific truth. He was doing an economic analysis to find out which way do I make more money. Okay, and in doing an experiment to evaluate, to test, so he created an instrument, a way of testing the absolute value of the motion. How much energy does it take to make it? And this is where they found out that heat is actually work. You don't make heat for free. You have to pay for it, okay? Heat does cost energy to make heat. Heat is work. It's just in a form that's not doing any work.
Others extended the idea to include heat energy.
No, he did that. I mean, obviously, he's a brewer. I mean, his experiment is about the temperature of the fluid. Of course, it was Joule who did that. Oh, take a break before I die. I'd be back. Back. Yeah, we are at the hour, so maybe I should try to wind this down.
Energy is always conserved, but only if you account for all types of energy.
Duh. And they already had these thoughts, so let's just understand that you didn't need Joule, you didn't need all this stuff happening in the 1800s or the late 1700s. They already knew this back in the Descartesian, Newton, Leibnizian conversations. It was already the argument that energy was something that you just try to follow its footprints. So this isn't about conservation. It's about what the hell the quantity is and whether you can somehow make its magnitude more significant. Whether or not the 1,000 people pushing with 1 pound of pressure is much less energy than one person pushing with 1,000 pounds of pressure. Whether those two things have different amounts of energy. That is the argument, that this one has 1,000 times more moving power. That the, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, 2 150-pound linemen versus 1 300-pound lineman. Their argument is somehow the 300-pounder, okay, has much more energy, twice as much energy as the 2 150-pounders. It's that kind of argument. It's terrible. And we have no physical evidence. Zero experimental evidence. They can't even give me a drawing of a lever working in their world.
The law of conservation of energy is an incredibly powerful tool.
Okay, and it has nothing to do with the history you just told. Absolutely nothing. The controversy had nothing to do, and you certainly haven't proven that mv squared is conserved. I can play you Professor Lewin, an MIT professor, telling you pretty explicitly, nature can screw around with kinetic energy, but it can't screw with momentum. Has to be conserved. But let's just pretend that doesn't happen either.
But it's not exactly surprising. For example, Du Châtelet's gravitational potential energy.
She did not invent this. This is not her theory.
Mass times the gravitational acceleration times height is just a statement about how much kinetic energy...
It's just a statement about how much momentum. So again, he just keeps saying it's kinetic energy when it's not. Oh, these closed captions are actually blocking the video. Okay. So she didn't know 1/2. So let's understand, she had no clue about the 1/2. So how can you make this argument that she understood kinetic energy when she didn't even have the half in the equation? She wasn't getting the right answers. She was proving a number that was half off. It's a big difference to say somebody, hey, you're fat, you weigh 500 pounds. Hey, you're fat, you weigh 250 pounds. Those are pretty different accusations, don't you think? Oh, God damn it.
Energy, half mv squared, an object like this ball would gain were it to fall.
So this is just about, again, the gravity argument, okay? So again, they're being fooled by gravity and the fact that it's something you're absorbing by how much time you're in the gravity. They think all that matters is how much distance you travel in the gravity. So it's the bucket argument. If you make a bucket and you're collecting gravity in the bucket, it doesn't matter how fast you're moving. It matters how long you're moving. So if the distance you're going in the gravity is short, not too much rain can fall into your bucket. If the distance you're falling is long, a lot of rain can fall in your bucket. So that's what determines the how to perceive this correctly. So this just has to do with them putting on their perversion glasses, where I'm not going to look at it for what it is. Gravity is something, a force that the longer you're in it, the more of it you collect, the longer you're falling in it, obviously. If I'm holding you up against it, then you can't collect velocity. You can't collect more weight. It pours out of the bucket, kind of thing. But they're just, again, gravity is not two cars hitting each other. Gravity is not a bowling ball hitting pins. Gravity is not a wrecking ball smashing into a building. By their theory, the big heavy wrecking ball is insanely inefficient. Insanely. I make the wrecking ball half as big and I swing it twice as fast. It does twice as much work. Then why do they have these big heavy cranes swinging this big heavy ball when they could get twice as much energy with a smaller crane swinging a smaller ball? Answer that question.
From a given height under constant acceleration. But that's just...
So it's not constant acceleration in the sense they're not collecting the same amount of force. A feather falling is not collecting the same amount of force. It's a small, tiny bucket. Little, tiny, tiny, tiny bucket. Very few atoms to collect with. The hammer, lots of atoms to collect with. Collecting lots and lots of rains. Big, giant, you know, canvas collecting the wind. A little, tiny canvas. No wind. Hardly at all hitting the feather. They move at the same rate because the feather's collecting a tiny amount of force, but it only has to move a tiny amount of mass. Which one impacts the ground? Which one obviously collected more energy? Obviously the hammer did.
Newtonian mechanics. And as a fun time exercise for the student, see if you can show that the square of the change in velocity of a falling ball is proportional to the distance it fell.
Okay, and again, of course it is, because your velocity increases. But so what? You travel more distance if you're moving faster. Duh! It doesn't mean you have more energy because you move longer distances. Longer distances don't mean more energy. They just mean that you're applying the energy differently. So this is the huge failure. So he's really talking about how they converted work into a distance argument rather than into a weight argument. How much weight do you have when you hit the ground? That's what's going to matter. How much weight you have. All right. So, yeah. So we'll leave it there. Maybe I'll play the rest of this, but it just gets into gobbledygook. You know, of course, it's a space-time. So it just starts equating it to all kinds of things that have nothing to do with the subject, then has a big giant commercial at the end. I don't think there was anything. Yeah, it's just more bad history. You know, more mischaracterizations of the reality. And getting into, the really Hamiltonians, all the silly reformulations. They're completely dependent on kinetic energy being real, when it's clearly not. All right, so I've done my job. I can only reason with you folk. That's all I can do. I can't force you to be reasonable. I mean, it should mean something to you that when I say there's no fucking evidence, they've had 300 years to provide you with some evidence. The clay experiment's obviously nonsense, so that's not going to work. Dropping sticks into water, not going to work. All right, so you have to find some better way to prove your theory. I've pointed out all kinds of ways to do it, and they haven't done any of those experiments. That should mean something to you. You should say, why haven't they done this? Why haven't they collected the energy of the bullet and then collected the energy of the gun? And why haven't they compared those two energies and shown that pretty much, yes, this is the third law. The same amount of energy goes this way as goes this way. The gun barrel, although moving very slow, is very heavy. Now, they say it has kinetic energy of 2 joules. They say the bullet has 2,000. How is that a respecting of the Newton's third law? So they'll actually argue with people that you're not respecting Newton's third law, when where's your respect for Newton's third law? 2,000 joules goes one way, 2 joules goes the other way. That doesn't seem like an equal sign at all. Duh. I mean, that doesn't mean anything to you as an argument. It just... You don't care that that doesn't make any sense? Is that what you're telling me? You don't care because the religious purpose is much more important? Preserving the notion that these physicists actually know what the fuck they're talking about is so important to you that you don't care that they obviously aren't very careful? All right, I'm not saying they're not smart. I'm just saying they're sloppy and reckless. And they are wooicists in the sense they want the truth to be interesting and fancy, and they certainly want it to be really complicated so they can feel superior to you. Okay, so they want to keep as many of these formulations as obscure and indecipherable to the common man. They want to keep all their secret mojo medicine bag a secret. They don't want to tell you the simple truth. They don't want to tell you, I just gave you an aspirin. I didn't give you anything wooey. Yeah, I did a dance and I did a whole bunch of crap. No, I gave you an aspirin. Okay, aspirins will make your headache go away. You know, I could lie and make this story about how all this other stuff did it, but no, the aspirin did it. So anyway, he just told us the history, and the history had nothing to do with this half, and he will not explain when they added the half. So he won't embarrass their own physics. He won't allow it to be embarrassed by the fact that, oh yeah, they had to realize at some point that the formula was a pile of shit. And they had to fix it. Okay. I mean, they finally did do a few experiments and realized we're not getting right answers. MV squared doesn't work. We got to fix it. Because it doesn't work. It's not the truth. Okay. Enough of a video. All right. Like I said, I can only reason with you people. All right. Till the next time and such and so forth. This has been a DraftPhysics.com video presentation.